us a little bit about, I mean, you kind of educationally had an NFL superstar career. Graduated from Regis High School, you went to Harvard.
Yes.
And you decided after college to try and do something for other people, which is not always what most people do. Tell us what your motivation was and how you started the IBP.
Well, surely. Born and raised here in New York, and you know, people aren't familiar with Regis High School. You know, it's an old boys Jesuit high school on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And what they really instilled in us at a very young age is that, you know, being meant for others. And because of that, we were, you know, not say forced to do community service, but, you know, pushed into it. Mm-hmm. And at a very young age, I started tutoring students and realized that, you know, most times when you think about tutoring, kind of from the outside perspective, right, you think it's more so lecturing, right, that it's kind of this one-way road of education. But after tutoring students, I realized it's really a two-way street. And I was actually learning a lot more from my students just about their lives, their challenges, than I ever thought I could ever learn in that sort of experience. And because of that, I realized that, yes, I was imparting them maybe some knowledge for math, for science, but they were giving me such a grand perspective on the world around me. And after that, something I just kept with throughout high school, throughout college, and honestly never thought of something that I was going to see as sort of a viable career, right, in the future, right? There's always that old adage that, you know, teachers don't make any money, right? And, you know, Harvard definitely lets us know that, you know, if you're going to a great institution, you know, the people who've left the school are billionaires, millionaires who controlled and ruled the world of sorts. And, you know, you get pushed a lot into the banking field, into legal, right, into consulting, into medicine. But I realized I just really loved education, you know, something that came really naturally to me. And my mother definitely was one person who definitely pushed that the most. You know, definitely after graduating, you know, we had a deep recession. You know, kind of my mother's attic, you know, and thinking about what are the ways I'm really going to, you know, kind of get out of this, you know, kind of mire what I'm in. And what was great was that she's like, you know, what comes naturally to you is this tutoring. You know, why don't you start tutoring? I started doing it for people in the community, and then started working with some organizations and realizing that it was really viable, that there was this real opportunity, you know, especially financially here in New York. And never thought that before. And had another guy from Harvard who I started with, Chris McConnell, you know, convinced him, said, hey, stay in my mother's attic, we're going to start this company, and essentially went to the schools, and it's unique, because at that time, everyone's crying, woe is me, market's going up and down like a roller coaster, mm-hmm. You know, people are jumping out of windows, don't know what's going to happen to their lives, you know, losing their homes, and one thing that was still constant was that students were still going to school, right, people still had to go to college, people still had to get prepped. But for what it's worth, people didn't have any money. So we saw it as a great opportunity to really get into the market. And with that, you know, we went into school providing free tutoring. We call it Climbing Ivy. You know, for us, we really, because he also went to an all-boys Jesuit school in Cincinnati, you know, again, it was a scholarship-based school. So what they always told us at high school was that we're going to give you the world. All that we ask is that you're good men moving forward. And kind of keeping with that adage, and we wanted to do that, especially for the schools that we worked with. So the first school we worked with was School of the Future in Manhattan. And, you know, at that time, they worked with another organization, and we said, hey, we're going to provide you guys with free SAT prep, you know, with two Harvard graduates.
Wait a minute, let me stop you there. Rod, for your audience that doesn't know, SAT is a Scholastic Aptitude Test.
Yes.
It's a test you have to take to get into college. What is it? What is it over there, O-levels?
Well, it would be A-levels, more than O-levels, yes. You
can okay.
Move on to A-levels or your Scottish Highers in Scotland. So it's a, you know...
Don't bring up Scotland.
The SATs are far more sexual.
It was great, you know, because, again, it's one of those tests that obviously every student has to take, but not a lot of students, especially in the inner city, have enough money to really afford the proper prep, right? A lot of the kids, you could say, on the Upper East Side, you know, who are kind of well-to-do, can afford. And, you know, again, we always wanted to even the playing field. And when we went to these schools providing the prep, kids went up 200 points. You know, the principal saying, I got these two Harvard guys who came in for free, got my kids up for 200 points. Someone else needs to know about this. And New York won me as New Year's of the Week. And pretty much, as they say, you know, the rest was history.
The rest is history. And how many kids have you worked with so far?
Since our inception, I mean, tens of thousands, you know?
That many?
Yeah. So when we first started, you know, we were working probably with, I would say, our first half year, you know, with the students we had at School of the Future, you know, we had about a good 100 there. And that just started expanding out because once other principals knew and they realized that, A, these are two Harvard guys who weren't charging us an arm and a leg, right? But they were really committed to our school and our community. Every principal wanted. So every year it has kept growing and growing. I mean, hundreds and thousands.
But I mean, are these special kids? Are these kids who are highly motivated? Are they kids who are on a particular track at these schools? Or are you just taking like raw material?
Oh, again, it's a mixed batch. You know, we'll deal with, you know, definitely your highly motivated students, you know, your kind of your talented 10th, right, as they want to say. And those are at certain schools, but we also deal with schools, since it's as Boys and Girls High School in Brooklyn, where you're talking about graduation rate, it's like 35%, mm-hmm. right? So for us, it's less so about, I want to deal with the cream of the crop and get them all to Ivy League schools. No, my journey and my goal is to make sure that students maximize their opportunities. And whether that's saying before your only opportunity was community college, now I want to let you know you got a state school that's available to you. Mm-hmm. And if it was a state school, now you know it's going to be kind of your second-tier school. If it's a second-tier school, now you got the Ivies open to you. And that's what's important for us, especially with our students. Now, granted, the students who want to go to Ivy League school, we're going to make sure we get you there.
How many of them are there? I mean, how many of you were?
Oh, we've got over 100 students in Ivy League schools. And, I mean, some of the students that we've worked with, you know, I personally worked with for 5 years. And, you know, it's something to be said when you look to a student who's in eighth grade and you say in 5 years, you're going to be at Harvard. You know, and they always go, okay. And as it gets closer and closer, and then the anxiety starts to build up in their heart, like, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm like, don't worry. Just be patient. We got this.
You can pick those kids out.
Oh, you can see them because no different than, you know, when you're looking at someone like Calipari, right, basketball coach, you can see someone who's in sixth grade goes, you're going to be the next superstar. You know, when you've been around with such students for a long time, you see the potential. And a lot of it is not just because, you know, the student's going to create the next best app, you know, create the next best Facebook. It's just their commitment to excellence. You see that. You see that they want to get every math question right, even though we're just dealing with algebra. I know that you already have the will there. All I have to do is make sure to harness that in a better fashion and make sure we keep you on path. And understanding that every year is an important year in terms of accomplishing a goal, right, whether it's 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade. And a lot of times, students aren't provided with that roadmap. And I feel like that's really the failure of the system. Because when students aren't provided with that roadmap, they don't know that they're going off course. So it's important that we provide that for them.
Now, Jay, hearing you speak, the fact that you were talking about sport there, it almost reminds me of a college coach's approach here. You're taking a very similar approach to somebody who is picking up a talented young, potentially football player or basketball player. But what I wanted to ask is, how do you deal with the student who says, oh, I don't need this education stuff. I'm going to be a basketball player, or I'm going to be a hip-hop star.
Funny enough, I will give you a perfect example. In our first full year when we were working with School of the Future, we actually had a couple of students who said exactly that, right? I don't need to study the SATs. I want to be a rap star. So I said, how do I motivate that student? How do I motivate these groups of students, right? And I told them, hey, guys, if you go up 100 points in each section, I already know a producer, I'll pay for your studio time.
That's an incentive,
right? And that's the thing. It's about getting to their ultimate goal, right, which they don't realize is still, hey, doing well in the SATs, getting to college. But if I can kind of dangle that carrot in front of you and make you think that you're kind of getting to your goal of getting to the studio and being the next Jay-Z, it's a win-win.
You know, it's funny you say that because I've interviewed any number of hip-hop stars over the years.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, I interviewed Curtis Blow one time.
Okay.
Curtis said to me, he said, look, man, I made all of that money, and you know what it was for? It was to get my kid through college, and he's getting to be a senior now. And I'm so happy because I'm finally getting through that period where I, you know, maybe other guys did hip-hop for other reasons, but I did this for my family. And now it's bearing fruit because my son is getting ready to graduate college.
And what I like to let the students know is that, you know, what you're talking about, you know, your Jay-Z, your Beyonce's of the world, your Michael Jordan, your LeBron James, those guys are committed every single day. they're every not hour of every single of the day. They're not just working when you see them on the court and when you see them in concert. You know, they're traveling, they're not getting any sleep. They're working tirelessly to become the best at their craft. And, you know, when students see that, and I always implore more, you know, people, figureheads such as those guys, to really showcase the hard work that goes into it. Because, of course, you know, we see the end result, the product, and we're going, wow, man, it must be good to live a life like you. You know, you just put out an album, so you made, what, a month to make that, and now you make millions of dollars. Everyone wants to live that too. But people don't realize, I think Pharrell said this the best, he was like, you don't know, to make one great song, there's about a good 100 that you will never hear that I made. That were just horrible, that I spent months on, and just had to throw away.
Wow.
Your success rate is just amazing. Are there more organizations like yours now, Jay, in the city of New York, for example, trying to bring kids into this more, you know, career path almost in their education?
For us, you know, we're definitely about, you know, tutoring and mentoring because that's integral in the process. And for us, you know, we realize that it's one thing to let a student know, hey, you're going to do well on the SATs, you're going to go to a great university. But what does that mean in the grand scheme of life, right? It's like, how you can really apply that? And I think that's really important. That's where the disconnect happens. You know, when students feel like, okay, why should I learn algebra? How's this going to help me in my future career, my future job? And I think it's about getting students to start thinking globally, you know, and not thinking just so locally. You know, somebody says to me when I was way younger, and it really stuck with me. He said, you know, it's great, I went to Harvard, but I need you to be a global citizen. And I'm like, New York's real big. It's global for me.
Well, you're expanding the Ivy here.
Yes, exactly. We're actually expanding it to India. And it was great. So we have a great organization over there at TGELF, as well as Shift Series. And they do tremendous work in Delhi. And, you know, for us, it's just, I mean, a great milestone. You know, to think that you can go from an attic in New York, right, to pushing things out in New York City to now getting recognized in India, you know, and having students learn from the IDK material, the IDK curriculum. I mean, to me, it's a dream come true, right?
We got a billion people over there.
you have a lot of students, but a lot of students who are hungry to win. And that's the thing. And I think it's something that it should be frightening for U.S. students, quite frankly.
Really?
Just because when you have, over the course of the last 3 years, five times as many Indian students taking the SATs, preparing for it. And they're not just preparing for it to get average scores. They're preparing to get a 2400.
They want a max.
They want a perfect score. And what you see, especially in Asia, is that you have students who are getting perfect scores, and families, even though Barstan may say they're middle class, have been saving up since that child's been born to pay off college. So there are no loans that are being taken out. They're paying for that straight up and down. And what's happening is that a lot of these schools are saying, hey, I've got this great student from China, great student from Korea, great student from India who is excelling. All they want to do is learn. They want to pay for our school, which is pretty much $250,000,
yeah,
right, without any woes. Then I have this student over here in the U.S., sort of mediocre, you know, has to take out loans. I'm not sure. He seems like more of a gamble. And I like to remind my students of that all the time, that global competition is increasing. And, you know, when that, this guy, Ray McGuire, when he told me, you know, you have to be a global citizen, I didn't understand that at that time, but I understand fully now that the talent that you have shouldn't be limited just to your local community. You know, you want to share that with those who, A, want to enrich you, but also want your experience to enrich their lives. And the fact that there are so many students in India who, you know, obviously want to be attached to the IBK, you know, who want to learn from us, and who are just enthused beyond belief that, you know, we want to work with them. This is heartwarming because those are the easiest students to work with. I mean, I can teach those students literally for hours on end, and it feels like 10 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
Incredible.
Jay, the music's about to start, but it does occur to me to ask, is part of what you're doing supposed to be being done by the teachers? What's gone wrong here? Is that a whole other half hour?
I don't know. I mean, I think, I know I hear this from a lot of my students. It's like, you know, I would have learned math if you were my teacher. I think that sometimes when you have people who are just kind of stuck in their ways, who are just trying to, like, you know, go through the motions, you know, sad to say sometimes they're trying to get to retirement. You know, they lose that passion, that inspiration that maybe drove them when they first started teaching. And I think that for us, it's just trying to re-inspire our students.
Coming up next.